You're listening to Central Time. I'm Cynthia Schuster.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we take stock of the number of gun homicides in Wisconsin this year and look at how one police department is trying to stem gun violence through voluntary home inspections.
First, it's time for Wisconsin life. Before California was the center of the American wine universe, the Midwest loomed large. Wisconsin had vineyards and wineries before the Civil War. Historian Erica Hanekel shares the history of wine in this region.
From about the 1830s through the 1870s, the Ohio Valley is really the center of wine growing in the U.S. I think this is something that not a whole lot of Americans know. We think that it was California, and it always was California, and there was nothing before California. And so this middle part of the 19th century is really filled with Midwestern wine growing. So, of course, Wisconsin has a deep beer history, and that's really coming on the backs of German immigrants. But German immigrants are also the ones largely doing a whole lot of the labor in the vineyards in the 19th century. The wine scene in Wisconsin really starts up about a decade and a half after brewing starts in Wisconsin. Brewing is really up and going by the 1830s. Wine comes to Wisconsin in 1846, or at least the story that gets told about the progenitor of wine was a guy by the name of Augustin Herázy. He was a Hungarian. He had all of these entrepreneurial schemes that he brought to America with him. And Augustin Herázy founds a winery in Wisconsin, very near Prairie du Sac, and it's actually what later becomes the Wollersheim Winery. But Herázy only stays in Wisconsin for 2 years. He moves to Sonoma, California in 1848, as you might guess, because gold had been found in Northern California. So he had to go and start up a couple of other schemes. And so after that point, for many decades, you have essentially several different types of families growing grapes in southern Wisconsin. By 1908, the University of Minnesota, their grape breeding program begins. And that really brings types of grapes that grow well in the upper Midwest onto the market for grape growers. So then, sadly, of course, prohibition hits in the 1920s, and it takes many decades, again, for Wisconsin to really kind of get its momentum back on the whole. It's not until the 1970s that winemaking, I would say, really begins to take off. Ever since, we've had a really pretty lovely dramatic increase, and really over the last couple of years. So today, we've got now, 700 acres of vines in Wisconsin, approximately. There are several places across the Midwest that do make wine and sparkling wines out of grapes that were particular to the Midwest in the 1800s. So the Catawba, Concord grapes were popular on the East Coast and in the Midwest. The Niagara grape, the Delaware grape. These are kind of specific grapes. While I have not tasted all of those, I'm definitely not a 19th century wine expert in terms of taste. I have tried sparkling Catawba, and I think it's actually great. There are lots and lots of wine snobs that will tell you, nothing from the Labrusca family of grapes is going to be drinkable, that it's all swill. And I just don't believe that.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television. For more information, visit wisconsinlife.org.
We're joined by Erica Hanekel. She's author of Empire of Vines, Wine Culture in America. Erica, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, you mentioned a central figure in the history of wine in Wisconsin is Augustin Herázy, but you also mentioned he only stayed here for 2 years, yet his legacy has remained with us since then. Why are those 2 years so profound?
I think it's because he promotes his own story so well. He is one of those 19th century characters that variously comes to be known as a count and as a colonel in his translation from Hungary to America. He definitely was not a count, and there are mixed interpretations of the history as to whether or not he was a colonel ever. And so it's kind of hard to separate fact from fiction on the Herázy front. He's one of these guys that has this really impressive mustache. He's dressed in flamboyant colors. He acts very aristocratically, but he's not of the nobility from Hungary. And so he kind of acts in this kind of showman sort of way throughout Wisconsin. And so he lands in Prairie du Sac, you know, kind of founds Sauk City, and he starts up with all different kinds of schemes. He starts up a brickyard. He starts up a sawmill. He's got a general store. He's got a hotel. He's selling lots to other new immigrants. He's got a ferry and steamboat operation. He's got sheep and pigs. He's also growing the first hop yard in Wisconsin. And part of this kind of showmanship, this sort of I can do everything all at once, he's telling stories about himself that include stories like him killing a wolf with his bare hands.
Wow.
That kind of grows into killing several different wolves with his bare hands.
Well, just to jump in a little bit, Wisconsin these days is known as a beer state. Was wine more prominent in the early days with settlers?
You know, by the numbers, I don't believe that it was. Wine was never as popular in the U.S. really anywhere as, you know, as popular as beer or as whiskey, really, alternatingly. We do have various early Wisconsin immigrants, basically in their religious practices and cultural lifeways, that are bringing their wine culture with them. So, of course, the Norwegians and the Swedes and the Poles are all kind of bringing their alcoholic kind of traditions with them. But as with most things alcohol-related in Wisconsin, it's probably best to focus on those German immigrants, the German population. So winemaking and brewing kind of begin in Wisconsin in the 1840s. By the 1890s, we see that most communities had a brewery, and far fewer than that, we do see wineries. But these wineries are largely staffed by German immigrants. And so usually they're more the laborers still at this point in the mid-century because they're kind of new immigrants. They don't have the sort of capital to come in and buy things. But they're more the laborers and the owners. But they also do often prove to be the best buyers of the products that they are laboring to make, and that includes wine as well as beer. You know, I'm sure most people in Wisconsin sort of know that by the mid-19th century, we see places like Milwaukee is kind of a brewing king of the Midwest. We've got labels, you know, Pabst and Schlitz and all sorts of German brands dominating. And then by mid-century, you know, especially with colonists' outposts, we see alcoholic beverages basically kind of more popular than we might think in a time of rising ideas about prohibition. Of course, prohibition, again, doesn't start until about the 1920s, but there's certain moments around that that come decades earlier where you see this ramp up to control of alcohol. And what that's usually pointing to is a control of immigrants at the same time. And, I mean, but on the other hand, alcohol is one of the very safest drinks to imbibe in sort of early, you know, quote-unquote frontier life, because fermented beer and wine kill the bacteria in the water. And so if you're going to be in a place that's kind of has an unreliable water supply, fermenting that is going to be your safest way around that.
And we'll leave it there. Erica, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
We've been speaking with Erica Hanekel, Associate Professor of Environmental History at Northland College and the author of Empire of Vines, Wine Culture in America.